321. All right, welcome back. Second half hour of tonight's NCAA tournament preview show. Frank and Habbo back in studio. Probably should say again our thanks to Town Bank for the additional support that allowed us to go to Greensboro. And
our good friend Kevin Lang.
Kevin Lang, Pat Collins, and all our friends at Town Bank.
Bunny Serbo.
Had fun down there. I said Greensboro, Washington, obviously. I'm used to going to Greensboro. This was at the Verizon Center up in Washington. But anyway, thank you for Town Bank, and we're going to have Chris Wright, the executive editor of the Sabre, join us here shortly, and Frank's going to do a little introduction of our buddy Chris.
Well, this is interesting. The ACC and the NCAA is number one in the East. Carolina's the number one seed. They're going to play the number 16 seed, which is the battle between Florida Gulf Coast, wherever that is, and Fairleigh Dickinson. And that game is going to be played on Tuesday night.
It's going to open the tournament at 6:40 from the Dayton Arena.
Well, that's an exciting game, let me tell you.
Do you know the mascots of those schools?
No, and I don't want to. Notre Dame, the number 6 seed in the East, plays the winner of the number 11 seed, Michigan or Tulsa winner. That game is played on Wednesday night at 9:10. Also, Pittsburgh, the number 10 seed in the East, plays Wisconsin, which is the 7th seed. And believe it or not, Wisconsin is only favored by 1.5 points, Habbo. All right, in the South, Miami, the number 3 seed, plays number 14, Buffalo. And you got to feel like Miami is going to crush Buffalo. I feel sorry for Buffalo. That's going to hurt.
The Bulls.
Yes, the Bulls will get pounded. In the West, the number 4 Dukies of Durham are favored by 9.5 points versus number 13 seed UNC Wilmington. Of course, the Mighty Wahoos, number 1 seed in the Midwest, will play Hampton, the number 16 seed. And the Pirates are no group to laugh at. I think they'll play very well, but I think the Hoos have too much. Wahoos are favored by 24 points. And the number 10 seeded Syracuse, a somewhat controversial at-large team, is going to play Dayton, the number 7 seed. And this game is a pick'em in Vegas, Habbo.
Pick'em.
Pick'em. So that means when the machines, the computers out in Vegas don't know what's going to happen, you know, invest at your risk on that one.
Well, you know, Thursday and Friday are the, well, for a basketball guy, those are the best 2 days of the year.
You know, oh, it's going to be exciting.
Because if you want to watch hoops, you can start at noon and the games go until after midnight both days. And inevitably, there are games that come down to buzzer beaters, upsets. So it's just the first 2 days of the tournament are a lot of fun.
Well, just think about all these venues. Raleigh has got UVA and North Carolina down there. I'm sure those guys can't wait to see each other again. You've also got Denver. That'll be the Mile High Games. You've got St. Louis, which is a major building out there. You've got Des Moines. Hopefully it's not too cold out there. You've also got Spokane, Providence. Look at some of these other sites.
Brooklyn. Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Providence, Oklahoma City. Here's Oklahoma City. So.
Yeah, that Oklahoma City is where VCU will play Oregon State.
And, you know, I did a little bit of research on that game. And believe it or not, the Rams are favored by 3 points against the Oregon Ducks.
Oregon State. That's the team that was bold enough year before last to fire the president's brother-in-law.
Very good. All right, we've got somebody on the line.
They went their federal grant dollars, you know, going to Oregon State.
Hey, that's kind of funny. So we've got our good friend Chris Wright from the Sabre on the line. Chris, welcome to Who's Talking.
Jeff's second best 3-point shooter on your show tonight. Habbo might have an argument, but they didn't have a line back then, I don't think.
Guys didn't see me play. I doubt if you could keep up, Chris. All right. So I know one thing. If you played on my team, you wouldn't have gotten the ball because I never met a shot I didn't like. Same with Habbo, for that matter.
Well, he's a lot like that on this show. I can hardly get a word in edgewise.
Oh,
you know, if I'd have played with him, I would have never touched it. I'd have played with Frank in Parkhill, I never would have touched it.
That's true.
Hey, listen, Chris, tell us about the Hampton Pirates. Give us a little preview breakdown of the game on Thursday.
Yeah, it looks like very guard heavy, very senior heavy. So you'll see as many as six seniors be part of the rotation. Three of the seniors that play guard are a big part of what they do. All three average in double figures scoring-wise for the season. But with that said, with all that experience and kind of that as the backdrop, they don't shoot the three very well. And they rely a lot on rebounding to score. Well, that's not a real good formula to beat Virginia. It just isn't, because Virginia is not going to let you offensive rebound. And if you already can't shoot the three, you're going to find it even more difficult against Virginia more than likely. So not a great matchup for Hampton on paper. I guess that's obvious in a 116 game. The one guy, the two guys really to keep an eye on. One's Reginald Johnson. He gets to the free throw line a lot. The other is, I think it's Chivas or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce it, but he's 6'6", and they can move him down to the four and play small ball. So that's something to keep an eye on. Will Hampton try to go small? We know Virginia can counter it. We've seen Mariel Shayok play the four some the second half of the season, so it's not a huge issue, but it is at least one matchup type of thing to keep your eye on.
Well, given what you're saying and given the line of the game that Frank has mentioned, have you taken a look at all at Texas Tech and Butler?
Just a cursory look, but they're both similar. You know, you end up in the 8-9 game because you weren't quite good enough to win your conference, right? So they're in that seeding range for a reason. We know Tubby Smith at Texas Tech has generally, over his career, played not a pack line defense, but a sagging man-to-man defense, so similar to Virginia, but not exactly the nuances. Butler, by my recollection, is similar to that too. So very similar teams on the other side of the pot there in Raleigh, which could help their preparation. It's not the exact same thing, obviously, but and then it seems like everybody ball screens. You know, that's kind of basketball in a nutshell today, a lot of on-ball screens. They do that to Virginia specifically to try to break up the pack line. That will be true from both of those teams as well.
Chris, Sports Illustrated picked four teams last week before the conference tournaments. Kansas, Virginia, Michigan State, and there's one more. Help.
North Carolina?
Nope.
Not North Carolina.
Villanova.
They
picked those four teams as being the four teams that would find a way to survive. Now, obviously, that was before the NCAA Tournament Committee had their third cocktail and decided to go ahead and put Michigan State back in the same bracket with Virginia and somehow give Oregon a number one seed, which I think is the fuzziest math of all time. Michigan State got robbed. They should have been the other number one seed. But anyway, that being said, make the case for why Virginia is a team that can survive and win and advance to the Final Four.
And they certainly can. The Midwest, to me, even with Michigan State there as the two, the overall feel of the 16 teams feels better than North Carolina's draw does, even though I think Villanova is not as good a two as Michigan State is. But, you know, both of those teams are ranked number one in the country at one point this year. So there's not an easy draw when you get to the Elite Eight. But overall, when you look at Virginia's potential path, so if all the seats hold, Hampton, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Michigan State, that's a reasonable draw to try to get to the Final Four. So that's part one, because we know that the tournament's very matchup dependent, and I like those matchups for Virginia until you get to Michigan State. Michigan State's a tricky matchup. You know, is those 10-3 in his head coaching career against Bennett's, Dick Bennett and Tony Bennett. So he's clearly got something figured out in terms of playing them. They lead the country in 3-point percentage. Not a great matchup, but I actually think it's advantageous to Virginia that they played them the last 2 years to try to get by them this particular year in a Final Four on the line type of game, because I think it'll provide motivation, and I think it will provide a little less nerves for Virginia than you would think in that scenario, because they know exactly what they're dealing with. So it'll be a tough matchup if that's what unfolds, but both teams have a lot of work to do before then. You know, our message boards are obsessed with Michigan State right now, and there's three wins for both teams that have to happen for that to even exist. So lots of work to do before then.
Yeah, hopefully Michigan State won't get there, you know.
That might get lost. Their bus driver might have a problem.
You know, speaking of shooters, as you know, we had Curtis Staples on before, and the one concern he expressed about Virginia was the scoring drought circumstance, which showed its ugly head again on Saturday night against Carolina. How much of a concern is that going forward for the Cavs?
I think it can be, but that, again, to me, that's matchup dependent. So the teams that have given Virginia the most trouble over the last 2 years or so with this particular group are teams that can really guard the perimeter and then not have to help as much on the inside. So Michigan State fits that mold. Purdue could. There are a few teams like that out there. You know, North Carolina pulled it off in the ACC title game where they were able to really fluster or at least really contest shots from both Brogdon and Parentes, and that seems to be kind of the formula. That's what Duke did as well. Florida State did a little bit of that. If you can just kind of get them a little bit out of rhythm, Virginia shoots so many jump shots in some of the games they play that's sometimes enough to get them beat. So to me, the biggest concern is I'd like to see them vary it up more, get the ball more touches for Gill when you're in a slump like that, more touches for Toby.
Yep.
And then if someone can figure out how to get to the free throw line. I still don't understand why Virginia doesn't shoot as many free throws other than they take more jumpers during those stretches than they should be.
Well, you know, Brogdon made an interesting comment after the ACC title game where he said they flooded the lane. And Brogdon drove in the lane, and three guys were reaching and pawing and bumping, but he didn't get any of those whistles in the finals. He didn't get any of them. And the fact that he didn't go to the line more is a little mysterious to me, but we're not going to dive into all that.
I think he needs to force the issue.
Yes, maybe some more acting.
Yes, they were flooding the lane,
yep.
But I think he needs to go in there and try to split guys and sell it a little bit. I hate to say that. I really do. I don't like all the histrionics that you see from guys like Grayson Allen, but sometimes you got to go down there and make it look like you get fouled.
Yes. Well, you know, the Duke acting class is always in session from Coach K.
That and their tripping class.
Their tripping class, which they've perfected that.
You know, it seemed like in the second half, to start the second half, Virginia went to Anthony Gill immediately, I think, on the first couple of possessions.
And then forgot him.
And he scored, and as Frank said, they went away from that. So maybe that's part of the strategy. As you say, you got to get some paint touches.
Yeah, I think that will actually help them. They can see that on film, that you can use Anthony Gill in different ways and kind of remind the guards that, hey, that guy's pretty good. Getting him touches when we're in a slump will benefit all of us.
Well, and also the other thing, if you're in a little bit of a scoring drought, it does help if you go into the low block. You might get a bucket, but you also may get a big guy that gets fouled, and at least you can go to the free throw line and try to get some points that way.
Or you might get an inside-outside look, too, instead of a look off a screen in terms of guard. So it just gives you a different kind of look, a different kind of rhythm on a shot, potentially, if you're a guard, just by putting it down there. So hopefully they do that if they run into a drought. Now, if you're a Virginia fan, you go, well, hopefully they don't run into any droughts, and none of this is an issue, right? So maybe they'll just get red hot during the tournament. That would be
a lot of fun. You know, inside-outside offense is not a bad concept, whether you have a drought or not. I think it's just an effective way to attack a defense.
Yeah, completely agree, especially when you got a 50-year guy like Gill and a 7-footer like Toby. So hopefully they use all their pieces.
And, you know, and for that matter, Isaiah Wilkins pops open occasionally when they do, you know, get the ball fed down low to one of the big men. You know, Reggie Miller was talking today. He's doing a lot of the games down at PNC Arena. He talked about freedom of movement, you know, the rules this year. You know, how will the referees be calling these games? You know, will it be called a little tighter so that players have to let the man drive and have to let the guy shoot the outside shot? Or, you know, will it be traditional guard play where everybody just sags back into the paint and the guards have to juke and bake and you know, pick off each other and then try to pull up with the little fadeaways near the foul line or on the baseline? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how the tournament's called this year. The freedom of movement thing early was so clear that they were overdoing it, and now lately it seems they've reverted back in some of the games, not all the games, but in some of the games. So it'll be fascinating really to see what you get, particularly if you don't get ACC officials in some of these tournament games. So we'll see. We'll see. I think Virginia can play and survive either way. That's the best news about this Virginia group is they're extremely versatile. It can be a high foul game. It can be a low foul game. It can be a four guard lineup. It can be bigs. They just have all the different combinations that they need to be in a survive and advance type of format. So now it just comes down to execution and making shots, I think.
Well, Chris, we appreciate your insights. Go Hoos. You know, I think it's important for Virginia to get through this weekend, and then we'll move on to the Sweet 16 and beyond, hopefully. But at any rate, are you going down to Raleigh?
I will be in Raleigh, so I hope to see a packed Hoo house like it was a couple years ago, and then hopefully in Chicago. So cross that bridge when we get to it, but hopefully the Windy City is in Virginia fans' future.
All right. Sounds good to me. Chris Wright, editor of the Sabre, a frequent guest. We thank you, Chris.
Thanks much.
Have a great evening, Chris.
All right. We're going to go to our final break. We'll be back, and we'll take a further look at some of the tournament bracket, Olympic reports, and other things as we wrap up tonight's version of Who's Talking. Stay tuned.